discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We are going to turn a corner in the series that we've been doing and focusing on women being healed. In this particular point, we need to take a look at infertility, because that is a struggle that so many men and women experience. There are many healthy couples that are struggling to conceive a baby.
Yeah, actually, there's the statistical point that about 6.2 million women in the United States, and that's probably an underestimate, but have some type of impaired fertility, including infertility, including other things. If you take that, and then and that's a very large number, then if you take all of the women who successfully had a baby through in vitro fertilization, this would surprise a lot of people because of all of the publicity that IVF gets, but less than 0.5% of those women successfully have a baby because of the availability of IVF. It just gives you in perspective just how really unsuccessful this treatment approach is. So it gets then to this question of why that might be the case and whether or not there might be some other approach that would be a lot more successful. And so we started our work back in, well, in earnest, in 1976, the very first time that we started teaching the Creighton Model System. And this was in April of 1976, and the first introductory presentation of this system we had two couples who came who had infertility problems. This was still when I was in St. Louis. And the only thing I knew about its application to infertility was that there were some abnormal cycles that could appear, and there was only actually one of these charts that had ever been published in the past, and that was by Dr. John Billings, and I saw it in his atlas that he had published. So I spent a half an hour talking to these two couples in detail as best I could, trying everything in the world to try to see that they would start charting their cycles and that we could maybe help them. And I was unsuccessful at being able to convince them to do this. So I got off to kind of a weak start in all of this. However, slowly but surely, we did have people who would come. And the first few years, all we had available was the charting itself. And in that group of women, between 20 and 40% of them got pregnant really without any other intervention, just by knowing when they were fertile. Mm-hmm. And then along the way, we also began to identify women who had no mucus pattern at all, or what we call limited mucus cycles, because the amount of mucus is really sharply reduced in infertility, and a variety of other sort of markers. We now call them biological markers or biomarkers that the Creighton Model System feeds back to us. And it guides us in the direction of where we need to go for evaluation. So over that beginning of the early 1980s and until the present time, we've been working on this and investigating. And what we have found basically is this. We see really significant underlying hormonal dysfunction, and that shows up only because of our ability to measure these hormones in a way which is timed properly with the cycle, and that's because of the woman charting her cycles. We find a very high incidence of ovulation-related abnormalities, which we can detect by doing ultrasound exams serially, daily, around the time of ovulation. And then we do laparoscopies on all of these patients. Laparoscopy is a surgical procedure where a small incision is made right under the belly button and a scope is placed. We can look at the uterus, tubes, ovaries, the whole pelvic area. Mm-hmm. And a very, very high percentage of these people have endometriosis. Some of them have polycystic ovaries. Some of them have pelvic adhesions. Some of them have blocked tubes. There's other organic conditions that we see. But to give you an idea, just in the distinction between these two approaches. There is a national law, federal law, that says that every 2 years the IVF clinics have to report their success rates. And they put out a big, I mean, it's a huge statistical evaluation of it. They also ask them, what's the cause of the infertility? And in the reports under endometriosis, this is all the IVF clinics in the United States, the percentage of women who have as an associated cause of their infertility something called endometriosis was 7.4%. Mm-hmm. In our program, it's 80%.
Wow.
Now, why is there a difference? Well, one is because they don't look. They don't even get a laparoscopy. So that's a large reason. And the second one is when they do look, they're not looking right. They don't know how to do a good laparoscopy, especially diagnostically, and they miss it. And I've just got countless numbers of patients and stories that I could tell you about of exactly that situation. So it gives you an idea. If you're looking really for the underlying problems, you can find them, and you can treat them.
That's in a IVF clinic, an in vitro fertilization clinic. They're not even looking or doing laparoscopies. That's not something that's not their specialty. What they are specializing in do is giving women drugs to be able to ovulate and have more eggs, and then for them to do the procedure that they specialize in.
These doctors are fully capable of doing laparoscopy. They've been trained to do that in their residencies in obstetrics and gynecology because they have to do that first. So it's not that they're not able to do it. It's just that that whole approach to treatment has been guided by the principle that we don't need to know what's wrong with you.
Right.
So if you don't need to know, then many times they don't get a laparoscopy. Now, there are times when they do laparoscopies, but then you have the other problem. They don't know what they're looking for. And that actually is a lot more prevalent than you can imagine. It shouldn't be, because these are very highly specialized physicians, and they should know what they're looking for, but many times they don't. And so they just miss it.
When you talked earlier about reported in the news often the successes of IVF and multiple babies are conceived, and it seems as though that's a very glamorous sci-fi type of new frontier that we're going on, and it seems very engaging as opposed to, dare I say, good old-fashioned knowing your body.
Yeah.
And finding out how it works and being able to work with it and to heal it.
Well, we like to kid around and say we help people get pregnant the good old-fashioned way. And
yep.
So we actually use that terminology.
Good, because it just seems so appropriate. It's how we were designed.
Yeah, absolutely. And so people find out. See, here's what happens. If you know what's causing the problem, if you understand. Now, understand, we don't know all the causes. So I'm not here to say or give the impression that I know everything, because I don't. And in fact, there's a lot of times I have to tell people that I think this might be the case, but I can't prove it, or I don't even know really what's going on. But I do at the same time identify several other problems that are probably legitimately associated with their infertility. Once we do that, once we begin to treat it, once we implement a form of treatment, and then if they're not successful, they can come to grips with it because they know they gave it a really good shot. They found out what ultimately was wrong with them. They understand completely that nobody has 100% cure for this. And they go through those various steps that are very similar to death and dying when you come to an acceptance of your infertility. And if that's the case, then they move on to adoption. And the families that are created through that are just terrific. And adoption is a component of NAPRO technology. It's one of the end aspects of this work, because if we get to a point where we can't help them medically anymore, we very much encourage adoption. And we've got a lot of really nice families that have been built through the Pope Paul VI Institute and through their own efforts at adoption.
The effects of infertility are, as you were saying, psychological and emotional as well. And that has to be healed, from what I hear you remarking right now.
Yeah, and in fact, it is a combination of the two often. The psychological and sometimes spiritual aspects of this are pretty complex and very difficult. Stress, for example, plays a role in some of this. And sometimes the only way that can be really completely healed or helped is through either spiritual intervention of some sort or psychological intervention. We have a psychologist at the Pope Paul VI Institute who works with some of our infertility patients with that.
NAPRO technology really is a OBGYN's dream approach to this, isn't it?
Well, I've called the Creighton model system a gynecologist's dream of a method, because we're supposed to all be experts in vaginal discharges, and that's what this system is based on. But most of the doctors don't understand it because they've never been trained in it, and they don't attach themselves to it. But it gives tremendous feedback in terms of some of the abnormalities. And then once we find those abnormalities, we can at least treat them to a certain extent effectively. And our overall pregnancy rates are actually very good, and they're better than the IVF clinics. But it takes some amount of time, and it takes some investment, and it takes, from a doctor's point of view, learning some new skills, some of which are surgical, some of which are medical and hormonal, and understanding how to implement those. But they're not that complicated. And we're training people now. We have just last year we started the Pope John Paul II Fellowship in Medical and Surgical Naprotechnology, and we have our first fellow who is training in this now this year. She's about 6 or 7 months into that program, and she'll be completing the 1st of August. And so this is a program that actually, we believe it or not, we have young physicians lined up to take this all the way up to 2010 now. So, I mean, there's really a demand for it as well.
Knowing how your body is, for lack of a better way of saying it, operating month by month, it does take observation on the woman's part. And women are very much a part of the process of their healing their bodies. You really do have a lot more control than you would by somebody giving you something, a prescription, for something you have no idea how it operates in your body.
Well, it's a really good point, because the patients that we see and work with are probably some of the best educated patients that you'll see any place with regard to their medical situation. And they truly become partners in their treatment. It becomes a cooperative effort. And it isn't some sort of physician with a lot of highfalutin skills that is the only one who understands what's going on. These women are very much a part of it. They understand from their charts the underlying problems. They can see why they might be a problem. And they also can see what a solution might propose, even if we don't know all the solutions, but they'll understand it, and they'll connect with it. And it's very, very helpful for them to be connected to this knowledge and to be a partner in what's going on.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment. A teaching of St. Paul from his first letter to the Thessalonians. We exhort you, brethren, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all. See that none of you repays evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to all. Rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I happen to know a woman, a patient of yours, Dr. Hilgers, who went to a IVF clinic originally with her husband, and she actually felt, now that she reflects on it, very lost, because when she originally went, it was almost like a throwing of the dice. You really didn't know whether or not you were going to be successful. They did indeed spend a tremendous amount of money to be able to go through the treatments. And in the end, it didn't work. And she had felt so sick. I mean, after taking the medication and getting her body prepared so that they could harvest the eggs.
Yeah.
So when she went to the Pope Paul VI Institute, she really thought it was her last chance. And first, she was very relieved that she wasn't going to have to feel sick, make herself, her body feel sick.
Yeah.
But also, it did take more time than just sitting in an office and saying, okay, I'm going to be treated, and then get up and leave and hope that it works. It involved her getting to know the rhythm of her body. It involved her husband. And they do. They have a beautiful little boy now. That it just was an extraordinary experience. And it made her a stronger woman. I mean, she wouldn't have done it any other way now.
Yeah, the tragedy, and we see this a lot with patients like her, is they say, I wish I would have known about you earlier, meaning the Institute. And but the good part of it is that you hear that kind of a story, and it could be replicated many, many times. There's a sense of self-esteem. There's a sense of self-confidence. There's a sense of well, you could use the word peace, I suppose, but there's a, when you do things the, you know, a way which is morally acceptable, I think particularly with the way the Catholic Church approaches things, you're bound to have a more peaceful approach to all of this and a more settled way of working with it, and being very happy to be a participant in it, like this woman was, and seeing that work positively for them. So sometimes the church, you know, I guess many times the church gets a bad rap for all of this. And really where the bad rap should be placed is, you know, the church hasn't always been so great at educating people and teaching them well. And that's something I do think that needs to change. But the actual fundamental teaching is really terrific. And it really gets to a truth, really, of human nature almost, of the human condition, and an approach which is quite different than what's out there in the everyday world, certainly. But as a sort of an interesting side effect, it's a lot more successful. So it has its rewards of working, you know, in a conjunction with an approach which is morally acceptable.
Well, the church's teaching really has its roots in the very essence of what it is to be born a female and male, and activities that you engage your life in throughout, so that you do not put yourself in harm's way. A lot of our moral teaching would have us refrain from sex until we actually found our spouse and we were married, and then we would engage. But in today's society, a lot of the activities that we engage in before we even marry can lead us to damage the workings of the bodies that we are created in. So you end up having sexually transmitted diseases in your body. You end up having the effects of contraception and so many other things that cause, in some cases, infertility down the road. So you have to repair a lot of that damage. Had there been this moral teaching heard and absorbed and lived out, you might not have found yourself in the state that you did, you know, by the time you were 30 or 30, sure. 35 plus.
Well, then on top of that, there's this overwhelming regret that comes into it, and sort of resentment as well, because they felt like they were pushed into all of this artificial stuff or all of this sexual behavior, for example, that, you know, everybody's doing it, so I guess I should do it. And they're upset by it, and it's tough. It's really difficult. I think it's far more difficult than doing it right the first time, you know?
Yep.
I really do. I just wish people could kind of get that message.
And that's why it's important now that especially parents that are out there, and even grandparents, that if you understand this teaching, that you pass it on to those children. And you begin, as you have said in previous discussions, that the idea of natural family planning, that it needs to be a part of a curriculum that is taught even to the very young, so it always becomes a part of their lives.
Yeah.
And as you said before, watching a mother and a father participate, and this is such a natural thing, it can be done. It just needs to begin in the domestic church.
Yeah, well, that's right. And actually, that whole idea is something we don't get taught much either. Mm-hmm. You know, but the cultivation of these values is by its very nature within the family, and it's the best place for it. You can't substitute for it very well anyway. And of course, the opposite is true too. If you cultivate all the wrong values, they tend to take hold amongst the younger people too, and then it harms them.
It does, and it is not the source of every disease that will affect the female body, but it does cause some of them. And that's what's so great about NAPRO technology, is that it's a disease-based technology.
It is. It focuses on trying to understand what those underlying causes or the root causes really are. Once you identify those, then you can develop treatment programs to eliminate them or correct them. And generally speaking, we're very good at doing that. But we're not perfect at it, because we still have a long way to go. But like I said earlier, I think we're not too far away from making some sort of another wave of real improvement in our success rates.
Once you've identified that, say, through a laparoscopic technique, that it is endometriosis, what would the treatment for that be?
Well, it depends on how much you have and where it's located. About 60% of the time, we can treat it right then and there at the time of the laparoscopy, and we use a laser. The other 40%, though, it's too extensive, and they actually need a surgical incision, usually at a later time, where we go in and excise and remove all the tissues. Now, when you do that, then you have to know how to repair all the tissues because you want to do it in a way that they don't get a lot of scar tissue. And we've developed a number of techniques through our research efforts at the Pope Paul VI Institute, which are very, very successful at preventing scarring. So we're very confident being able to do that type of surgical approach. Now, what happens, just a couple of things right now, in the everyday world of it, the treatment of endometriosis is they're either given Lupron, which is a medication, an injectable medication that shuts off the cycle and creates an artificial menopause, or they have a laparoscopy and it's cauterized or burned with a thermal energy device. Well, the recurrence rate after each of those two forms of treatment is nearly 100%. And the Lupron does not improve fertility at all. It's been shown. The cautery does improve it a little bit, but it's short-lived. Laser, on the other hand, vaporizes the tissue. It actually physically removes it. So if you do it through a scope, it'll be less than 20% recurrence rate. And if you do it by surgically excising it all, it's less than 7%. So you can really accomplish a lot surgically. I think endometriosis is basically a surgical disease and not a medical one, and it should be approached that way. But if you're doing that, you better know how to do it right, because you can also mess it up if you're not well trained in how to do it. And unfortunately, most of the young doctors coming out today are not very well trained in it.
Also, through charting and knowing your body, you can identify when a female's hormone level is not adjusting in her body effectively to help her be able to cycle properly.
That's really true. See, what the Creighton model does is it gives feedback both to the woman and to her physician as to where in her cycle she might be. I always tell my patients sort of a quiz that sort of thing that, you are aware that your hormone levels are not the same from day to day. And, oh, yes, they raise, they say yes, they understand that. Mm-hmm. It's almost a universal piece of knowledge that most women have. But their doctors, for some reason, approach it almost from the point of view that's not the case. But because it is the case, you have to target the cycle properly in order to get meaningful information. So if you're charting your cycles, you know where you're at in your cycle, you can target the cycle repeatedly if necessary and get meaningful, really good and meaningful information back. What happens with most doctors, they'll ask for a progesterone level, for example, on day 22 of the cycle, presuming that every cycle is 28 days long. Mm-hmm. But only 5 to 10% of cycles are 28 days long, so it's a very small percentage. And a day 22 progesterone level actually is not very meaningful.
When you identify all these, then the treatment plan can be entered into by not only you, but also by the woman.
Right. What we do is we have them start charting. They come in eventually for a physical examination. They go through the hormone testing, the ultrasound testing, and the laparoscopy. And then we sit down and spend an hour with them, go through their charting, their results of their laboratory tests and investigations. I show them the videotape of their laparoscopy so they know exactly what we're doing and what has transpired and what their problems are. Mm-hmm. And then we sit down and pull the whole program together in terms of a long-term care protocol or program. So they're very much in tune with, say, the next 6 to 12 months of their treatment program. And we can begin to implement it. And then we're in touch with these patients on a cycle-by-cycle basis. And we adjust medications or approaches depending on what the chart shows us or what some monitoring of some hormones shows us.
What would you say your success rate is?
Yeah, there's several different ways to look at success rates. One is by disease category. So if you take something like polycystic ovaries, it's one of our most highly successful, and we're about 80% successful. And those are per woman pregnancy rates, and that's kind of important because when we compare it to IVF, per woman pregnancy rates are really low there. If you take endometriosis as an underlying cause, it's going to be somewhere between 50 and 75%, so it's a little lower, but it's still quite good. If you have women who have blocked fallopian tubes or scar tissue in their tubes, it goes down to about 35%. So, but that 35% is higher than what you get with IVF. It's 1.4 times higher, and at the other level it's 2.8, so between 1.4 and 2.8 times more successful than the IVF approach, and it cures or treats your condition, your underlying disease process, and so it's got a lot to speak for it. And in the future, it's only going to get better and better.
And this is a type of treatment that when you have your successful pregnancy, even after the pregnancy, it's an ongoing care of your body. It's an ongoing treatment of your body, as opposed to now you have the baby, goodbye.
No, you're absolutely right. And because they'll continue to chart their cycles, they have a way of monitoring not only their fertility and infertility, but also their gynecologic health. See, it's really the first time that a family planning system has been completely networked with a sort of a health maintenance system. The Creighton model is a Creighton model fertility care system is a way of blending or networking family planning with reproductive and gynecologic health maintenance. So it's a terrific system. I just can't wait to be able to get the word out more and more and more to people because of what it can do for people. So that's, to me, it's very, very exciting. And for many women, it's very exciting. Sometimes they're not too excited about it, but generally speaking, the people we work with are very enthusiastic about it and really want to learn more about what's happening in their bodies.
Well, and that exciting word is coming out of the Pope Paul VI Institute located in Omaha, Nebraska, and it's the work of all the staff there and of Dr. Thomas Hilgers. We thank you again for coming today.
Can I just say one more thing?
Absolutely, Dr. Hilgers.
This is sort of an interesting one, but I have a family doctor, family physician that we trained here almost 10 years ago from Ireland. He moved to Ireland. He was still a resident in his family practice. Mm-hmm. When he got finished with his residency, he had to decide, do I go into the sort of government health program or do I set up my own shingle? He said, decided he was going to be a naprotechnologist, and he has set that program up. He started treating people with infertility, began having all sorts of success. He got on a national television program in Ireland, and then now he's booked up a year in advance. And he's got 120 or 30 women who have become pregnant with the use of naprotechnology after they failed in vitro fertilization. It's an incredible.
How about that?
And of course, all the IVF doctors in Dublin are not real happy with him, but it's terrific. And he hasn't aborted any babies. There's no cloning going on. There's no embryonic stem cell research. There's no frozen embryos. It's really terrific.
And that's Dr. Phil Boyle, isn't it?
That is Dr. Phil Boyle, yep.
Dr. Thomas Hilgers, the mentor of Dr. Phil Boyle. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Great being here.
You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.